Part 1. The Mystery of Fermentation. Chapter 2. A Babel of Theories. Before starting any examination of the contributions of Bechamp and Pasteur to the scientific problems of their age, it may be well to consider the utter confusion of ideas then reigning in the scientific world in regard to the mysteries of life and death, and to the phenomenon of fermentation. This chapter will give a quick outline of the absence of clarity surrounding these leading questions. And though the work of earlier scientists invariably led up to subsequent discovery, yet in the days when Antoine Bechamp and Louis Pasteur commenced their work, the understanding of the subject was, as we shall see, in a state of confusion. Three paramount problems faced scientific inquirers of the time. 1. What is living matter? This, protoplasm, so called from Greek words meaning first and formed. Is it a mere chemical compound? 2. How does it come into being? Can it arise spontaneously, or must it always be derived from pre-existing life? 3. What causes matter to undergo the change known as fermentation? Among Professor Bechamp's prolific writings, much discussion may be found of the confused babble of theories on these subjects. To start with the first question. What is living matter? There was merely the vague explanation that protoplasm is the living matter from which all kinds of living beings are formed and to the properties of which all are ultimately referred. There was belief in a substance called albumin, best represented by the white of egg, which was said to mix with certain mineral and other matters without changing its nature. J. Dumas demonstrated that such albuminoids comprise not one specific thing, but many different bodies, but the contrary opinion prevailed, and for such substances, protoplasm, was adopted as a convenient term. It was the physical basis of life, according to Huxley, but this hardly illumined the difficulty, for to pronounce protoplasm to be living matter per se was not to explain the mystery of how it was so, or its origin and composition. True, Huxley further declared all living matter more or less to resemble albumin, or white of egg, but this latter was also not understood by either biologists or chemists. Charles Robin regarded it as being of the type of the mucoids, that is to say, as resembling mucus, which itself was so shrouded in mystery that Okeyan called it urshelim, primordial slime, and the botanist Hugo Moll identified it with protoplasm, thus dignifying mucus as the physical basis of all things living. Claude Bernard tried to determine the relation of protoplasm to organization and life, and combated the general idea that every living body must be morphologically constituted, that is to say, have some structural formation. He argued that protoplasm gave the lie to this belief by its own structural indefiniteness. Charles Robin followed the same view, and gave the name of blastema, from the Greek word meaning to sprout, to the supposed primordial source of living forms. This was nothing but the old idea of living matter, whether called protoplasm or blastema. A cell, a fiber, a tissue, any anatomical element, was regarded as living simply because of its formation by this primordial substance. Organization was said to be its most excellent modification. In short, formless matter was supposed to be the source of all organized living forms. In a kind of despair of any experimental demonstration of organization and life, a name was invented for a hypothetical substance magically alive, although structurally deficient. Imagination played more part in such a theory than deduction from tangible evidence. Thus we find that the physician Bichat, who made a name for himself in science before he died in 1802, at the early age of 31, could not accept such an explanation, and declared that the living parts of a living being were the organs formed of the tissues. A great step was gained when Virchow thought he saw the cell in the process of being built up, that is, structured, and thus jumped to the conclusion that it is self-existent and the unit of life, from which proceed all organized forms of developed beings. But here a difficulty arose, for the cell proved as transitory as any other anatomical element. Thus many scientists returned to the belief in primordial unstructured matter, an opinion oscillated between the views held by cellularists and protoplasmists, as the opposing factions came to be known. Confusion reigned among the conflicting theories as they struggled to explain how a purely chemical compound, or mixture of such compounds, could be regarded as living, and all sorts of powers of modification and transformation were ascribed to it with which we need not concern ourselves here. Instead, let us consider the second problem that faced Bechamp and Pasteur when they started work. How does this mysterious living substance come into being? Can it arise spontaneously, or must it always be derived from pre-existing life? It is hard to realize nowadays the heated controversy that raged in the past around this perplexing mystery. The opposing camps of thought were mainly divided into the followers of two 18th-century priests, Needham, who claimed that heat was sufficient to produce animalcule from putrescible matter, and Spallanzani, who denied their appearance in hermetically sealed vessels. The first were named Sponte Peristes because of their belief that organized life is in a constant state of emergence from chemical sources, while the second were named Panspermists because of their theory of a general diffusion of germs of life, originally brought into being at some primeval epoch. For the latter view, the teaching of Bonnet, following upon that of Buffon, was chiefly responsible. While Buffon's ideas are reminiscent of the ancient system ascribed to Anaxagoras, according to whom the universe was formed of various elements as numerous as its different substances, e.g. gold was supposed to be formed of particles of gold, and a muscle, a bone, a heart, to be formed of particles of muscle, of bone, of heart, etc. Buffon taught that a grain of sea salt is a cube composed of an infinite number of other cubes, and that there can be no doubt that the primary constituent parts of this salt are also cubes, which are beyond the powers of our eyes and even of our imagination. This was an experimental fact, says Bechamp, and was the basis of the system of crystallography of Hauy. Buffon argued in the same strain that, in like manner that we see a cube of sea salt to be composed of other cubes, so we see that an elm is but a composite of other little elms. Bonnet's ideas were somewhat similar, the central theme of his teaching being the universal diffusion of living germs capable of development only when they meet with suitable matrices or bodies of the same species fitted to hold them, to cherish them and make them sprout. It is the dissemination or panspermy that, in sowing germs on all sides, makes of the air, the water, the earth and all solid bodies vast and numerous magazines in which nature has deposited her chief riches. He further maintained that, the prodigious smallness of the germs prevents them from being attacked by the causes that bring about the dissolution of the mixtures. They enter into the interior of plants and of animals, they even become component parts of them, and when these composites undergo the law of dissolution they issue from them unchanged to float in the air, or in water, or to enter into other organized bodies. Such was the imaginative teaching with which Bonnet combated the doctrine of spontaneous generation. When it came to practical experimental proof, one party professed to demonstrate the origin of living organisms from putrescible matter in scaled vessels. The other party denied any such possibility if air were rigorously excluded, while a pastry cook named Appert put this latter belief to a very practical use, and started to preserve fruits and other edibles by this method. And here we are led to the third conundrum. What causes matter to undergo the change known as fermentation? It is a puzzle that must have been brought home to many a housewife unaware of scientific problems. Why should the milk left in the larder at night have turned sour by the morning? Such changes, including the putrefaction that takes place after the death of an organism, were so much of a mystery that the causes were considered occult for a long time. Newton had suggested that the effect was due to catalysis, a process in which a substance called a catalytic agent assists in a chemical reaction but is itself unchanged. The myriads of minute organisms revealed later on by the microscope in fermenting and putrefying matter were at first believed to be mere results of the general process of putrefaction and fermentation. A new idea was introduced by Cagniard de la Tour, who suggested that fermentation is an effect accompanying the growth of the ferment. That is to say, he looked upon the ferment as something living and organized, by which fermentation is rendered a vital act. It was the microscopic study of beer yeast, undertaken about the year 1836, which brought him to the opinion that the oval cells he observed were really alive during the production of beer, decomposing sugar into carbonic acid and alcohol. Turpin, the botanist, interpreted this as meaning that the globule of yeast decomposes sugar in the act of nourishing itself. J.B. Dumas maintained the necessity for nitrogenized albuminoid matter, as well as sugar, for food for yeast cells. Schwann, the German, went farthest of all by declaring that all fermentation is induced by living organisms, and undertook experiments to prove these to be airborne. But in spite of other experiments confirming Schwann's work, for a time this teaching was set aside for the view that vegetable and animal matters are able to alter of themselves. For instance, the theory was held that by dissolving cane sugar in water it changes of itself into grape sugar, or glucose, or, using technical terms, cane sugar undergoes inversion spontaneously. Such, roughly speaking, were the scientific ideas in circulation at the Middle of the 19th century, when Antoine Bechamp and Louis Pasteur appeared on the scene with details of their respective experiments. As Pasteur is renowned as the first to have made clear the phenomenon of fermentation, besides being appraised as the one who overthrew the theory of spontaneous generation, let us now, instead of taking this on trust, turn to the old French scientific documents and see for ourselves what he had to say in the year 1857.